Hello again, and welcome to another edition of The Boundless Show. It's sunny here in Colorado. We hope it is where you are as well. Either way, this is going to be an exciting show. As promised, we have the men in the studio for their version of the online dating saga, and we're going to be getting their viewpoints very soon to act as the counterpart to the women's views that you heard weeks ago. But first, I have an update on the eHarmony story. And as many of you may know, there was a statement published by the VP of Publishing of eHarmony, Stan Holt, basically in response to what I can only assume is a slew of people who have now contacted them as a result of, for those of you who aren't in on the scoop, their article that they published called Navigating the One-Night Stand. And it was basically on how to have a successful one-night stand while, in fact, you are, I'm assuming, waiting for the love of your life that you're finding with the 29 Dimensions or whatever else they promise on their site. So that all that to say, he basically comes in and says that he was unaware that this article and a couple others, he references them, was published. This kind of, Ted Slater actually referred to this as the I'm sorry you were offended kind of apology as far as this goes. Anyway, the point being that he said they removed the articles from their site and they're still committed to helping members find highly compatible long-term relationships. And he read the column, found it inappropriate, whatever. So just a couple of things that I'm going to say here. You know, he says he was made aware of the column by virtue of the fact that, you know, whatever, someone on his staff or something. The fact that he was aware of the column is because people started canceling their accounts. Okay. I mean, for real. So, which was in large part due to this podcast and Family News and Focus and other outlets here at Focus that decided to alert people to this. You know, I had a friend who called them and said, you know, that she wanted to be removed from their membership and was told that they have to publish articles like this because they're relevant and people need to know this information. So I hardly think, you know, he was shocked at that. And again, I say, you know, the fact is eHarmony is no longer a Christian site. Just people need to know that, you know, they're marketing to Christians as a Christian site still. I just think that's concerning. And I don't think they're really in the process of purging their site because you can still find an article on there entitled How to Fan the Flames of Desire, which is fantastic advice. Yeah, no. anyway, and that just has a whole bunch of whack stuff about how, you know, you're compatible, you enjoy doing things together, whatever, and I'm sure that there's sexual chemistry in the bedroom. Okay, well, you know, praise the Lord. You know, that's good. Anyway, all that to say, that's the update. We'll keep you posted on what's happening in the eHarmony sphere.
Remember the days when it used to be that I was the one living out my dreams? And whatever happened to that great big smile? When did it not become my style?
Going into today's topic, I have got, you heard, what was it? Oh, I don't know how many podcasts ago. Several. The ladies, as we brought them into the studio to talk about online dating and their experiences with it. And we promised that we would bring a panel of men in here as well. And we have certainly done so. So I just want to go around and just have you guys say your name really quickly. Four guys here that we have in the studio to talk about their experiences. And let's go ahead and introduce ourselves.
See, it's unfortunate about radio is that you can't actually see the faces of these striking young men.
Yeah.
I just wanted to point that out. So our bios will be up on the website later on if you're interested in looking.
It is completely tragic. It's cool. Maybe we'll work something out for you, Jason.
Well, my name is Jason Phillips, and I am from Colorado Springs. Moved here about a year ago. And I'm an online dater. Serial. So we'll get into that later.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
My name's Christoph Robert, and I'm from Colorado Springs. I grew up here. And I've done some online dating, but I've never actually met anybody in person, so.
All right. Well, maybe you will as a result of today's podcast.
Especially when they post our bios on that.
Absolutely.
Yes.
My name's Gabe, and I'm going to be transplanting here to Colorado Springs, but I live in Loveland right now. And I've got a little bit of experience with online dating, but I think I scored on the first round, so
bonus.
Yeah, so hopefully I won't need any more online dating experience.
Gabe is actually dating one of my friends, So we're not going to say that we think you scored. She's fantastic. So
okay, I know I scored, but I'm hoping it pans out well.
Okay.
It looks like it will.
Well, we'll give you credit for that.
Right.
Okay.
And I'm Garth, and I am a former online dater.
All right. So, well, that's excellent. Well, I am actually going to start this discussion off with the same question that I asked of the women. And so you guys have to be on your toes and ready to respond to this. And it is, why are Christian singles in general online today? And why specifically did you go online? Anyone who wants to start?
Oh, gosh, I'll jump into this right away. I'll tell you one thing. In the circles that I'm most familiar with church and, you know, the sphere of people that I know, I think it can be, at least my perception is quite damaging if you date someone and then end up breaking up later. You know, you've got this person that's continually in front of you and you have to kind of navigate through that. So I think in part, part of the reason people are looking towards eHarmony or some of these other online sites is to maybe get a little further away from their own sphere of influence, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you mean the kind of the grass is greener kind of thing? Or
no, not so much. I mean, I've had experiences where I've dated gals in the past where it's been difficult to part ways, and yet you're seeing this person on a pretty regular basis through church and things like that. So part of the reason I had diversified to begin with is because I wanted to run less risk of actually seeing this person had things not worked out, which is kind of sad. I mean, I don't know if that's exactly
that sounds
way
like a breakdown and just kind of
yeah, exactly.
Rather it's than a need to go online. Well, <find someone.
laughs> Yeah, some of what I observed in singles groups was it was almost felt, never stated, but like it was taboo to ask, or because you were considered hitting on one of the girls in the group and everything. So it didn't matter how good a friend you were. It didn't matter the chemistry you had. As if you asked them out, it was like you were crossing a line that was not supposed to be crossed in the group, when the whole idea of all the singles getting together was because they were singles and in my stage adults. We're not talking about a high school group here. Mm-hmm. And it was almost unofficially frowned upon. You had that feeling like you couldn't pursue anything within your sphere of people that you knew or were really close to.
Almost like an artificial spirituality to avoid a meat market.
Exactly, yeah.
Was this like on another planet? Because this has not been my experience, Dave. where is this singles group? Where have you
I've seen it? Before, yeah.
Okay. Well, I know there is talk of the meat market kind of mentality, and yeah. I think that does. Do you think that specifically scares guys off because they don't want to be perceived as just, you know, Neanderthals or...
Either that or the people are, you're walking on eggshells to such a point where it isn't a meat market that you sort of shoot yourselves in the foot and you don't get to meet anybody on a more personal level.
Mm-hmm.
It's your church group, it's your friends group, and you just don't progress it past that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then there's always the concern of breakup.
Yeah.
And then you've got two camps taking sides.
Okay. Well, Christoph, tell us why you went online.
I'm pretty shy.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's really hard to ask out somebody. So, you know, I went online to, you know, get to know people before, you know, asking them out or trying to meet somebody, because it's a lot easier than doing it in person.
Mm-hmm. And how is it easier? Like, tell us about your experience. Like, you just throw out, obviously you have the, you know,
like if I ask a woman out in person, you know, it's like, I'm going to throw up.
Which generally doesn't bode well for the
right.
relationship.
Not at all.
Yeah, that's not a good start at all.
Okay.
But, you know, online, you know, I can show interest without being intimidated or sticking my foot in my mouth. Pretty much just not doing anything really stupid that would doom me to eternal loneliness.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you said though that you didn't actually meet anyone that during the time that you were online. So do you feel like your experience maybe then wasn't a success? Or
yeah, because most of the time when I was online, it was while I was, you know, alone. Mm-hmm. And wasn't very involved in church at the time and wasn't meeting a lot of people. Or it was when I was in college and I was 27 and hanging out with a bunch of 18-year-olds that I had nothing in common with at all.
Hmm.
So it's just really hard to get, for at least for me, to get to know people and then try to move a relationship forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Garth, your experience was somewhere in between the two poles, or you can choose a side, yeah, maybe, or just pick a whole other experience, yeah, altogether.
Well, no, I think that it serves a purpose. It definitely provides you points of contact with a lot more people than you'd have in your immediate circle. If folks in your immediate circle aren't anyone that you would be attracted to for any number of reasons, but at the same time, it is an artificial context. It works for some, it doesn't work for everyone, and I think it's a tool. It's not one or the other, it's a tool, and use it, and if it works, great, and if not, then don't use it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you guys feel when you signed up for different services, and whether you got matches or whether it was something where you went out there and you were supposed to just surf profiles on your own, did it kind of make you encouraged by the women that you saw, or were you just kind of like, because I know in the women's one we talked, I mean, we literally got, you know, players, guys who lied about their age, guys who were basically had no direction in their lives, a lot of different things like that. And there was just a lot of scariness with, you know, some decent folks, obviously. Obviously none of you, I wasn't matched with you, I'm sorry about that, but but obviously, you know, some decent guys in the mix as well. But what for my girlfriends, who many times have said to me, I wish I could just go and lean over a guy's shoulder and see who these women are that they're getting matched with, what kind of was your experience?
Crazy.
Crazy?
Right. You know, some of mine, I mean, I was always sort of, I was afraid, like Christoph, to ask a woman out, mm-hmm, and everything. It was the thing that was nice about online for me was the no wasn't a knife in the heart. It was just they closed me out for other. Which I'm sure everybody's familiar with that one. Yeah.
Is the worst for women.
They always seem to be pursuing some other relationship too, which I never understood why they were on the site in the first place. Everybody always closes you out because they're pursuing another relationship. But they've been communicating with you for the last 2 weeks. Yeah. I don't understand. But I ran into some of the I tried to read the profile before I looked at a picture. And you're reading this profile, and what they're asking for is incredible. I mean, it's perfect and everything. And then you look at the picture, and you're like, oh, there's no way they're going to go for a guy like that. You see it's the same situation where the woman wants somebody who's kind and sensitive and intelligent and strong and all this, and then they go for the exact opposite just because it's looks. Well, we get that kind of profile, mm-hmm, on eHarmony. We're looking at that, and we're like, oh, wow, this woman's really down to earth. She really knows what she wants. And then we look at the picture, and I was like, there's no way she's going to go for some guy like that. Mm-hmm. And so there were a lot that I didn't even worry about because I knew there was just no, or I felt that there was no way that they were going to go for me because of I fit the profile perfectly and I could tell that I'm just not the one that they want.
Okay, now why are you saying that based on the photo?
Just from experience. Yeah, like from experience. Yeah, you've got this incredibly, I mean, it's almost like a model picture.
Okay.
And
well, those are fake usually.
Well, exactly. So when I see some of these things, I could tell is this person for real or not. So it's not just the guys that are being fake on there. The girls do it a lot too.
Absolutely.
I guess a guy can.
That was quite agreeable.
That was very good.
What
cool
fake
response
person did you get, guys?
I mean, some of these profiles, the things that they like to do or that they do regularly reads like an REI catalog. I'm like, you don't have the time or money to do all these. There's no way. You know, okay. So it can be very crazy.
They're like climbing Kilimanjaro and out there.
It's a laundry list.
Leading.
It's fascinating. I'm
while
sure that
they're
there are
leading
some
small
that do
kids
that
clubs.
Yeah, exactly.
All the philanthropic things. Okay.
I mean, there are some for sure genuine ladies out there that are being honest, but there are some that are
I had that
games
on
too.
Mine, and I do those things. I'm just telling
okay,
you.
Well,
so
there
you
go.
I was at least honest about it, but you know. So
I had a gal, kid you not, physically photoshopped her head onto somebody else's body.
Oh.
And when we met in person, I was just like, there's something really awry about this.
Awesome.
Well, and maybe she was aiming high, though. Maybe she had goals. I mean, so,
oh my goodness,
I mean, you never know.
Crazy.
So, wow. Okay, so there's a fair share of scariness.
Yeah, I mean, I think I could... I was able to pick out ones that I could tell clearly this just wasn't right. easier than maybe a woman would be able to pick out a guy. And I don't know if that's just because I was so cynical, or if, and maybe women are, or have higher hopes or something and everything, higher standards than us guys. I don't know. Yes. And everything. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They probably have higher standards than us. It goes both ways, but of course the odds on eHarmony are better for a guy. There's what, 2 or 3 to 1 or something like that.
Or like 700 to 1 or something.
Yeah.
I mean, somewhere
in between. Depending on where you're at.
So that's why they charge $60 a month.
Yeah.
I just have to say that my favorite match thus far was a woman from another country who wanted to meet me in another state that I did not live in. On a trail, in the woods, and did not want to tell anyone, and I should not tell anyone.
Wow.
Like, do you not watch movies? That's so scary.
Bring all your credit cards.
That's fantastic.
Did she want your routing number to your tagging?
I think I closed for other.
Other. That's a good other reason.
That's a good other.
That's a
great
other.
Because they don't give the option, I'm afraid of you.
No.
So apparently that's a concern.
I keep
but...
meeting or getting matched with women from like Russia or Africa.
Ooh.
Exotic. Who want me to meet them, and they're all automatically talking about getting married.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, yeah, you really like me.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you're a U.S. citizen.
How do you get your filter set?
That's got to be an encouragement, Christoph. You know, you've got what they want, I tell you.
They like Americans after all.
All right, so for the women out there who are listening, and you know, you can, this online stuff aside, women who want to know what guys are looking for, like when you, whether you looked at a profile and you were looking for something in particular, or you were, you know, because basically every woman who's listening to this is just going to say, guys only look at the photos online, whatever. And then maybe, you know, they like cross their fingers and, you know, God help us. Hopefully she's godly and a Christian, you know, or whatever. But that's just secondary. I mean, that's the general impression. But what are you guys looking for, whether online or just, you know, offline, in a female at this stage in your life? And I'm just going to put it on the table here that no one can say the Proverbs 31 woman, because I will actually physically
leap over the
hurl.
Table.
Yeah, or leap over the table and kill you. So anyway, so who wants to start?
How about key point number one? They need to have an updated photo that's at least within the last 5 years.
Okay. That would help. There were some, I mean, there were some graduation pictures from high school on 30-something-year-old women, wow. And that's not, I mean, I can guarantee you, I'm looking at the photo and making judgments, mm-hmm. and everything. There's no way around it.
Well, as I said in the women's podcast, the 1988 drill team photo where the
exactly.
girl's got a sequin vest and she's all, it's like glamour shots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so they have to be real. They have to be who they actually are. But, and like I said, I mean, you can talk about online or not, just what...
My answer would differ between the two. Online, you don't have the luxury of observing this person. So if I were to just read this anonymous profile, well, anonymous in the sense you don't really know this person, I actually think that profile is a key, quote, marketing piece in terms of a one shot to demonstrate that you are a woman of God actively pursuing him and worthy of pursuit. Mm-hmm. And so many times, I mean, if lip gloss shows up in your top 5 things that you cannot live without, it's a big problem. I do not want to talk to you, okay? That's just a
okay,
bug.
Whatever,
but,
Garth, because men put iPods in their top 5,
well, then
okay?
Then you shouldn't
so...
talk to them. I mean, it's just, they're not serious.
Okay.
But if it were in real life, offline, then I have the luxury of being able to observe, how is this person demonstrating their walk with Christ in a variety of circumstances over time? And I'd be careful to pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, you can usually get, you look at their initial marketing profile, and then once you start seeing the answers to some of the questions, you can, I mean, I whenever I had an opportunity online, I wrote my own question, and sometimes mm-hmm. it was pieced together from different ones, but I reworded it so that you could answer it very wrong. And everything, if you weren't following Christ, mm-hmm. if you weren't seeking him, it would be so evident in the way you answered the question and everything. So as soon as that disparity popped up, I knew that I wasn't dealing with the real thing.
That's good.
And stuff. And that's what I went with. And it was very clear when it happens. You can tell just by the way a question's answered. Even if it's a yes or no answer, you can start piecing together some things.
Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't even get to a full email communication without knowing that the person's for real or not, mm-hmm. unless you're blinding yourself to something, which I know people could do because they like what they see, they like what they're reading, and then they started ignoring some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
In person, I'd have to agree with Gar. You'd have to observe the person, see how they're living. That's where my big fear came in, though, is I was really afraid to interact with a woman on a personal basis, and so sometimes breaking the ice online helped.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely the in-person thing, you've got to get to the person face-to-face.
Okay.
And so no matter what you do, no matter what you observe, you've got to meet them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this has been excellent. I want to thank everyone. I want to thank Jason, Christoph, Gabe, and Garth for being here today, for sharing their thoughts about online dating and beyond. I think it's been fantastic, and I think it will definitely spark some discussions among our listeners. As always, we want to hear from our listeners. We want to get their feedback. Please email us at editor@boundless.org. We would love to get your opinions on this, especially from you guys out there, to weigh in on this issue and give us your thoughts. And we didn't, when we first started this, didn't plan on calling out eHarmony on the front end of this, but this has obviously just transpired within the last few days. So, but I know people who have met their spouses online and, you know, have great solid marriages. So there's definitely goes both ways. So thank you guys again for being here.
Thanks.
A donde nadie ha llegado, al sol de un cielo más claro.
In the studio with me today, I have Jim Daly, who is our very own president and CEO of Focus on the Family. Welcome, Jim.
Lisa, great to be with you.
Woo-hoo. Well, Jim is obviously here to talk about how he's going to give a crazy amount of funding to Boundless so that we can eventually take over the ministry. So we're going to just talk about some tactics related to that. Jim, he and I have the same personality type.
Is
which I think
right?
I've mentioned to you before, but I think you forgot.
What does that mean?
But for some reason, I find that just incredibly important, and I have to keep bringing it up.
Is that the Myers-Briggs or the whatever?
Oh, okay. We're both ENTP, which is the most awesome personality.
Is that right?
It is.
I didn't know it was the most awesome.
Yeah, it is, because we're just fun and friendly yet thinkers.
Oh, good. I like that.
I'm just going to say that.
ENTP, okay.
Listeners, do not be writing in.
Yeah, do they know what that means? ENTP. What is it?
Every single knows the Myers-Briggs because you have to like take the test to figure out, you know, it's apparently some entree into if you can eventually be married. I think it's kind of like it's the new litmus test.
Okay, I just don't see that happening 200 years ago, you know.
Oh, no, because 200 years ago you just married the person the next dirt lane down from you.
Exactly.
But now it's a whole scientific process.
Right. Or that your mom and dad.
Are 30 and still single.
Or your mom and dad arranged that.
Right, yeah.
Yikes.
But my mom and dad just sit and scratch their heads and wonder what my problem is. So,
oh, come on.
I know. It's concerning, but I'm trying to release the bitterness related to that.
That's right.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're going to talk today about Jim's book, which is called Finding Home, An Imperfect Path to Faith and Family. And this book is basically the antithesis to anything that, you know, anyone who is familiar with Dr. Dobson, I know we've talked about this here at Focus, about Dr. Dobson's upbringing and really what the legacy of Focus is and his whole history of the ministry and how it was just prayed through basically until he started it, and the legacy of his dad and his grandparents. And your story is a little bit different as far as your beginnings. And I know that this book has gotten quite well received in the publishing world and beyond, and you've done numerous interviews related to it. But for those of, you know, for our listeners who may not be familiar with the book, Jim, just give us a synopsis, really, of your story. Like, start from the beginning and really where it came from.
Well, Lisa, I appreciate that. Let me just say before we go to the story, I think with Dr. Dobson and others that lived in intact homes that had a mom and dad that loved them, that he would even say it wasn't perfect,
mm-hmm.
but it was good. It was healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, that's what I think every child longs for.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly don't want to position it to say, you know, that's funny or strange. I mean, that is what the human heart wants.
Oh, exactly.
It's just the unfortunate part is that very few children get to experience that, particularly today.
Mm-hmm.
In the 60s growing up, I was born in 61, and growing up, my mom and dad were alcoholics. I mean, that was just one of their vices, and my dad couldn't shake it. My mom did, and I'm the last born of 5 kids, and 6 years to my closest sibling. And so I was kind of the only child. They all ran in a pack together. They were just 1 year apart.
That's me, too. I'm the youngest.
Is that right? Are you the youngest?
Well, that's between my brother
and I. That's
the
fun part. Well, we're the party people.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, I think the realization for me is that I knew that there was a problem. I still felt loved and all that, but my mom and dad just couldn't keep it together, their marriage, and they divorced when I was five. Then my mom remarried when I was eight to this just military, ex-military, actually, drill sergeant Hank. I called him Hank the Tank. Even at eight, I had nicknames for everybody. Hank the Tank came into my life, and they were married a little over a year. Then my mom died of cancer. And so I'm 9 years old. We haven't seen our dad in a long time, years. And Hank, at the day of the funeral, just walked out of the house, said, I can't take the stress. And I think he was very close to an emotional breakdown. So there were five kids. I'm nine. My oldest brother's 19 in the Vietnam War, and he was heading off to a ship that very night. So he left, which left my brother Dave, Kim, and Dee, and myself. And we were just in that house in Long Beach thinking, what are we going to do? And, you know, God's hand was on us. I can't explain it. It's His grace, His mercy. There wasn't anything special about the Daly clan living in Long Beach, California. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, I just felt like He took an interest in this little family. And my mom, the day before she died, Mr. and Mrs. Hope, our neighbors, we called them Grandma and Grandpa Hope, led her to the Lord in her hospital bed. And then we moved into foster care after Hank left, and this was with the real family, mm-hmm. and that was a real experience. They had their own, you know, I've come to the conclusion every family has dysfunction. Mm-hmm. You know, Dr. Dobson says it right, you know, nothing's perfect in this life in the area of family. And so there we were at the real family, living in this just horrific mess for a year. My dad reappears. I move in with him. He still can't hold it together with his alcoholism. I'm 12. I move in with my brother, who's 21, mm-hmm. and we pretty much batch it through high school, my high school years together, in mm-hmm. his early 20s, and that was the story.
So were you pretty much, as far as school goes, I mean, were you just kind of eking your way through school? I mean, how were you balancing that with just all the transition?
Now, school for me, and I've talked to people, experts, who, you know, they just say that must have been your structure. Mm-hmm. Kids, I think, long for some kind of boundaries and structure that in their heart. And school, for me, provided that. I love school. I enjoyed it. I love science and math and all that. I didn't excel at it. Mm-hmm. I was kind of a B student. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed getting up and going. Nobody had to prompt me. I really enjoyed sports, mm-hmm. took an interest in that. And, you know, I think that gave me something that I needed at that time.
And didn't you receive a mentoring relationship?
Wasn't football
that
coach.
Kind of the turning? Yeah, football yeah. coach. Tell us a little bit about that, because we talk a lot about mentors
Do
here
you?
On the Boundless Show.
Yeah, Coach Paul Morrow. I nicknamed him Coach Mo. I had nicknames for everybody.
Wow,
I don't know
why. Okay.
Coach Mo. So Coach Mo and his wife Joyce did. They took an interest in me. I think they understood. I don't think we talked a lot in the early days of our relationship about my situation living with my brother and that. But they just took an interest in with me, and they asked me to come over to their house for dinner. And eventually, when I was 15, he scholarshiped me to go to a Fellowship of Christian Athletes camp where I accepted the Lord at 15. And so, you know, I think that his trust, his hope, his friendship toward me made a huge difference in my life. Just some adult that cared. Mm-hmm. And they looked normal, whatever mm-hmm. that is, mm-hmm. you know, and Paul and Joyce were just wonderful folks. And that really set me in a good direction through my years. And then they moved my senior year of high school. They asked if I would move with them, whether or not I'd be willing to have them adopt me. Hmm. And I remember I just felt my brother, that would be so crushing to my brother. Hmm. I decided I just couldn't do it. But boy, I just ached in my heart. Because I wanted to do that. I thought I'd move to Arizona with him. He wanted me to play quarterback for his football team. And, you know, it would have been Cinderella land, I guess.
Yeah.
Boy style.
Yeah. Now, is that the period when you really came to faith in Christ? Or what was
Yeah, I think over the next 7 years, I've said it. And I've not gone into a lot of detail about it. But at 15, I accepted the Lord. But I'm living with my brother. I'm setting my own boundaries. I mean, I never was told when I was in high school, be home by midnight. Mm-hmm. I'd come home anytime I wanted to. And mm-hmm. I could do whatever I wanted to. Mm-hmm. So I think even there, you know, God, I think, protected me, but I did stupid things. I mean, I didn't use biblical wisdom when I was mm-hmm. 15, 16, 17 very well. Mm-hmm. But then I studied abroad. I studied in Japan at Waseda University. I came back at about 21, 22, and that's when the Lord really got a hold of me. That's what when I knew what it meant to be a Christian man. And I had another mentor at that time, Lenny Mitchell, who actually was the husband of my mom's best friend, P. Penny. Now, there's another name for you, Lenny and Penny. I don't know why God's got a sense of humor with names with this stuff. But so Lenny was a big band musician with Tommy Dorsey, played in the original Stars Born with Judy Garland and the Ten Commandments. He was one of the trumpeters and just a really talented guy. And he'd gone deaf as a musician, and God got a hold of his heart. And that was the first man I saw that I believed he believed the truth. I mean, he just acted it out each and every day. And there was never, I remember two Mormon guys came to the door, knocked on the door, and I was there doing a little Bible study with them. And he opens the door, and they went through a little spiel, and Lenny said, you know, you guys are leading people to hell. He's just, he had that kind of Paul boldness, you know. And he, one of those guys came back that night, and he led him to the Lord. So, you know, there's just that, there was that kind of forcefulness of spiritual depth with him. And I had a great time living there with him at his house with Penny for about 4 months. And I think that was probably the next level of mentoring that I received that really set me in the right direction.
So did all of these just happen organically? Because I talked to so many singles who just, they can't even find a mentor because no one, you know, thinks that they're qualified or thinks they have the time or whatever. I mean, how, I mean, what was the connection?
Well, in the case of Paul Morrow, I think, you know, it was just striking up conversation and having a connection, even though he was my football coach. He, there was something there. There was a good chemistry and I enjoyed spending time with him and I think he enjoyed spending some time with me. So I think that's part of it. You just need to be someone that is interested in other people, and they find you interesting, hopefully.
Well, again, the book is Finding Home, An Imperfect Path to Faith and Family. My mom, I gave my mom a copy of the book, and she read it and wrote you a letter, actually. She was so, cute. She called me up, and she said, I just can't even believe this story. She said, I just don't even, I mean, is it really even all true? And and I said, yeah, Mom, it's true. He's talked about it several times.
It's not going to be like the Oprah show. I won't be like that guy that gets on there and the whole story is fabricated.
Right, yeah. So she said, well, you know, I wrote him a letter and I just had to tell him, you know, that it encouraged me. And so she got a little a letter back from you. And of course, she had to say, you know, my daughter, Lisa, works
incredible.
At Focus on the Family.
The incredible ENTP.
Lisa Anderson works at Focus. And, you know, I was like, okay, well, hopefully Jim will remember who I am. No,
oh, come
kidding.
On.
Just teasing.
That's a lot of fun.
Well, as we go out here, Jim, a lot of our listeners on the Boundless Show, the Boundless Show may or Boundless may be their only point of connection with Focus. So just give an idea of what now on a macro level is your vision for Focus on the Family and how can young adults in their 20s and 30s really catch the vision for what Focus has going on, whether they're single or they're engaged, they're anticipating marriage, just moving along, you know, on that trajectory of into adulthood. How can Focus help them along the way?
Well, I've always felt, you know, Focus on the Family, our strength is the resources, the content that is here to help people live hopefully fulfilled lives and spiritually. I mean, questions about God, whether that's Boundless or the Truth Project or any of the websites plugged in and all of it. And we want to stay consistent on that and continue to provide people great content. And I think for the 20, 30-something listener or anybody beyond that, you know, it's really about preparing them or helping them to grapple with the big questions that are out there. You know, I was with a couple of Christian leaders yesterday. We were talking about embryonic stem cell research, and they just said to me, I don't really get that. And you can come to Focus and get a little bit of an answer, an insight as to what that's about. And so many other things. I mean, marriage, being single, why has God forgotten me? There's just a cup of cold water, some help here to help them along. And so I think moving ahead, one of the things that I'm excited about, I'm 46, but the 30-20 crowd, about social activity. I believe in that. I mean, the mentors in my life made a difference, and the FCA camp and school and, you know, things outside of the home. And I think Focus's next big horizon is rolling up our sleeves and actually getting engaged in the community. And that's through churches and through YMCAs and boys camps and girls camps. How do we get our content down there? How do we get people out there in the community helping? Orphan Care Initiative. How do we actually extend a hand of help to these folks? Not just talk about it, but really get into it and put an arm around people. And I'm excited about that. I hope everybody else is too.
Yeah, I think we've seen a lot of interest and a lot of excitement from, you know, on the blog and here, the podcast, from folks who really want to find something to pour themselves into. And we're hoping that we can direct them in that way. And I know that we, and, you know, myself in particular and the team here are so excited, Jim, that you're our president, and we think you've just brought a lot of insight and fun and just the way I think that you relate to Dr. Dobson and, you know, have just really partnered with him now to take focus into the next stage is fantastic.
So. It's a privilege, and I'm glad you guys are doing what you're doing with Boundless.
We are
and what is that you're doing? No.
Well, that's why, you know, when you give us the $10 million that we're looking for,
let's
just
going to
get, that'll be, okay,
20,
3 weeks or so, we'll get that off the ground and go from there. So.
And Lisa's private jet, of course.
Of course, with
just
the hot
kidding.
Tub.
Yeah, with the hot tub. We'll have to argue on the hot tub.
All right. So, Jim Daly has been our guest today. We'll hear more from him in the future, I'm sure. Again, giving a shout out again. The book is Finding Home, An Imperfect Path to Faith and Family. Find it at boundless.org. Go ahead and order a copy for yourself and for many other people as well.
Even in the little things that never seemed too big to me, and the things I thought didn't matter much at all, as simple as my daily bread, to the strength I need to get out of bed, when I fly or when I'm about to fall.
Well, many of us were certainly overachievers in college. We got all the ribbons, we got all the awards, we did all the classes. But then you hit after college, and what do? Well, if you're stuck in one of those jobs that maybe isn't where you thought you would be, you can use that time to spend making some other goals. In this week's Hungry Years, Patrick Dunn tells us how he did it.
I graduated. I was awash in congratulations. Now what? Well, what to do after college was a recent Boundless Show topic, and it was a great reminder of that time in my life when I graduated. I celebrated such a thrilling personal achievement. I'd bravely conquered the educational giant. Well, you know, if you're almost there, just think, you too can frame your diploma and stare at it, beaming with pride as you wonder what in the world you're going to do with your life now. Or maybe you've devised the perfect plan. It's just that, well, God hasn't cooperated yet. That was me, graduating with honors, an A average, and the award for most illegible note-taking because I'd fall asleep in all my night classes. I tucked my cap and gown away and promptly rushed off to my job at the drugstore with a green vest that loudly announced, "Hi, my name is Patrick, and I feel continually humiliated." For another year, my college degree and I stocked pet food, pushed shopping carts, and even mopped up spills. I knew what I wanted to do with my life, and the next big step was out there, somewhere, wasn't it? I remember countless times crying out to God, searching for answers. Why can't I use these talents I feel like I have? How do I deal with feeling so restless? And whatever happened to my pet lizard? Did it really go to heaven? Sorry, I've kind of never gotten over that one. But here's something I did learn, and maybe it'll help you. These waiting periods are a great time to focus on other areas in your life, set goals, and keep moving forward. However, you have to be careful and set goals properly, especially if your self-esteem is a little bruised, just like mine was back when I was a big loser. Sorry, a little flashback to that time there. Anyways, goals. Well, I learned that one reason personal goals fail is that they can be too ambitious. So I decided, back then, to make smaller ones, like, this summer I'm going to use electricity, and starting Tuesday, I'll allow my liver to work. These baby steps gave me something to build on. Plus, I learned why some of my previous goals had failed, like these. This year, I will become a really smart scientist. And during spring break, I'm going to evangelize the Southern Hemisphere. I also discovered that goals can fail when you set too many. For some guys, this isn't a big deal. You know, their goals might be, 1, work out more. 2, go to the gym. 3, start lifting weights. 4, get bigger and stronger. But this can actually be a little more challenging for some girls. By the time they're done setting goals, they have a recipe for discouragement. Start exercising, stop snorting when I laugh, begin journaling, drink more water, paint toenails weekly, stop imagining the guy I want to marry, buy a car, stop teasing dogs, no more fast food, help more at church, give 12 hugs a day, write grandma, sing in the worship band, stop eating processed cheese, memorize the Old Testament, no more sneezing around guys, Try quilting. Go green. No more ponytails. Pick up the guitar again. Tour with David Crowder. And this list is just for the first 2 weeks after graduation. Anyways, I used my green vest days to set goals in different areas of my life. I learned a ton about God's design for relationships and what made me tick. I took care of some baggage from the past, and I even focused on trying to eat better, which, actually, as an aside, wasn't very easy. I'm originally from Wisconsin, where butter is considered a food group. After college, your friends may be rushing off to a new career. Success stories are everywhere, and you're still wondering who to send a resume to once you get home from your job managing burrito castle. But you can triumph over discouragement. The next step may be on hold, but you can still set goals. Make the most of this window. Let it refine you. Straight A's or not, I needed a lot of work. And of course, pray. Then do something really crazy. Wait. Better yet, let go and trust God. He changed my focus from, what should I do, to, what do you want me to do? And, who do you want me to be? And that time of waiting became one of the most pivotal times in my life. You know, God's plans aren't always in line with our plans, which is a really good thing. Eventually, God led me to a job that I had only dreamed about, and I got there in a way I could have never dreamed up. And it wasn't by being the smartest, the best, or by having my plan and working my way to the top. Instead, I surrendered, and I set one more goal, to live for Him, even if it meant wearing a green vest for another year.
I'm waking up from the longest sleep, from a place with shadows all around me, arrested by a love so bright, illuminates my world and pushes back the night.
Opening up this week's Boundless Inbox, we have a question from Joey, and this is actually kind of a heavy one this week. I have Steve Waters in the studio with me to address this from a guy's perspective, because I think it definitely needs that. So I'm going to go ahead and read this. Again, we're getting a little bit of context from Joey, so here we go. Over a period of several years, I developed habits of lustful indulgence that eventually led to online pornography, though I never ended up engaging in sexual activity with another person. Over the past year or so, I've made several efforts to get serious about breaking such habits. I installed a filter on my computer. I meet with one of my pastors weekly for accountability. By God's grace, I'm seeing growth in this area of my life, and while I have still failed a few times in the recent past, I've also had successes, and I believe I'm on the right track to experience long-term victory. Being in my mid-20s and quite convinced I don't have the gift of singleness, I've been thinking about marriage within the next few years. Obviously, getting married requires pursuing a relationship first, and so I've been thinking and praying about when and how I would go about pursuing someone. My question is this: when would be the right time in a relationship to disclose my failures regarding lust? I certainly intend to wait on starting a relationship until such failures are truly past and I've been experiencing more consistent victory. But whenever I do start a serious relationship, I would almost feel it deceitful for the other person to be unaware of my past. And yet, I would not think it wise to bring up such matters early on in a relationship. Any advice?
Joey, this is a very important question. It's one I hope more guys will have the courage to ask. I was noticing that in the same way that the World War II generation, the guys who came out of World War II, a lot of them took physical and psychological injuries or wounds into their marriages, that we really are seeing a generation of guys who are bringing those wounds of lust and pornography into marriages in really tragic numbers. And so I just appreciate your humility and your desire to find healing in this area before you go into marriage. But especially I appreciate your sensitivity to the timing of disclosure, because that does really matter in a relationship. And so the simple answer on timing is this: it's best to disclose your failures once you've earned the trust of a potential wife who feels protected by you and believes you see her as a child of God and not as an object for gratification, for lustful gratification. Because lust, especially when it's fueled by pornography, conditions you and any other man to be consumers, people who want to objectify women as a means of their personal pleasure being fulfilled. But as you're probably discovering in your accountability meetings, God created sex to be its most fulfilling when we don't think as consumers, but when we give of ourselves sacrificially to another person in a lifelong commitment. So in other words, it's we find ourselves by losing ourselves.
Okay, but Steve, tackling lust isn't just as easy as flipping a switch.
No, that's a good point, and it's something that a lot of people actually waste a lot of time just trying to stop the problem, just trying to work harder. The good news is that Christ can redeem us body, mind, and spirit, and that's exactly what this guy and all guys need in terms of confronting a lust problem, is that they really have to have a body that has become a living sacrifice that they lay down. They have to have a mind that's being transformed and a spirit that's being regenerated. And boy, you know, a great website for that is pureintimacy.org. It's a website we created here at Focus, and it's just got a lot of great articles for actually having that kind of response to it.
So for Joey's sake, let's get more specific about the timing involved here. I know he addressed that at the end of his question.
Well, as he increasingly is growing in this redemptive process and a lot of the things we talk about in Pure Intimacy, I think he is going to be seeing a new kind of way of looking at the women in his life, and that he especially is going to have new eyes for someone who he begins to see potential as a wife, because now he's not thinking of her as an object, but thinking of her through God's eyes and realizing that he's going to have to lay himself down for her, not that he's going to look to her to meet all of these sexual fantasies that he has. And so as he begins opening his eyes and preparing himself to be a godly husband who can lay his life down, who can protect and sacrifice for this person, then that's what's going to earn her trust and her ability to know this guy is able to protect her.
So would you say then that after they establish a relationship and maybe eventually get married, that these things should continue? The accountability should continue then, and the, you know, there's no harm in keeping the filter on? And
yeah, absolutely. The filter continues to be a way to block temptations, to curb the things that are going to be continuing to come into the house. But the accountability and the growth and intimacy, body, mind, and spirit through accountability and through a growing spiritual development, all those things are things that we have to continue to do to be where God wants us to grow into the design he has for sexuality.
That's interesting. I remember talking to a guy who leads a large college on-campus ministry, and he said that he told the women that he talks to not even date a guy unless he's willing to install a filter on his computer. And he used that as one of the, you know, parameters.
Yeah, well, I saw a study recently that 60% of guys feel like pornography is okay. And I think we've gotten to the place where we tolerate. In fact, they said the same study, 40% of women said it was okay. But most of that grew out of their desire not to offend the guys in their life who say it's okay. Mm-hmm. But it's just a poison that people are letting come into a relationship. Or actually, if I could use a better metaphor, it's something that sucks the life out of a relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's the key thing we're seeing both in relationships that might be moving to marriage and then actual marriages that have had the life sucked out of them by pornography.
Hmm. I blame Chandler on Friends. I think, well, like, any time that you connect pornography with humor, because he did. He made it a funny thing, and he made it a casual thing, and he made it, you know.
Oh,
and
everybody is now.
And, yeah, it's obviously very dangerous. So, well, thank you, Steve, for weighing in on this. I think this is going to be great. For those of you who were listening to this segment of the Boundless Inbox, we want you to know that we actually have a counseling line here at Focus on the Family that we would love to connect you with if you need more personal information or assistance or prayer, encouragement, related to this. You can call us at 1-800, the letter A, and the word family. That's 1-800-A-FAMILY, and someone will be happy to speak with you and possibly even link you up with a counselor locally for you there in your area. And of course, here at Focus on the Family, we have a number of different resources and tools and just encouragement, advice, columns, articles that would be available to you as well. So that is definitely available, and we want to encourage you to take advantage of that. Also, if this particular topic struck a chord and you want to share your own story or want to ask a follow-up question, please do contact us at editor@boundless.org. We always want to hear your feedback for related to this topic or anything in the future that you would like us to address. Until next time around, this is your host, Lisa Anderson. Thanks for joining us today on The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.